Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. The hotline is brought to you by Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. The first call, the only call. Next segment, we are expecting a call on the hotline from the newest Canuck, Elias Lindholm, supposed to join us at 1:05 today. Of course, Lindholm in Toronto with several of his other teammates for All-Star festivities this weekend. So looking forward to chatting with Lindholm coming up at 1:05. Lots of good texts coming in here. This one came in before the show from Dan, who says he's off work with a hurt back. So
feel better, buddy.
But thank you for texting in and listening to the show. He says, just wondering if you guys could talk a bit today about the puzzle that remains after the Lindholm trade. Everyone's talking about Tanev, but when I look at the roster, it's so clear to me that the D is actually over full already. Tanev, while he'd be an upgrade, would be a bonus. Meanwhile, Mikheyev and Suter are currently top six wingers. He says Toffoli, to me, would be a perfect fit or a similar player if he doesn't become available. He says that would bump Suter down and et cetera, everyone would be slotted properly, says cheers, thanks for reading from Dan. So I did want to talk just in general about, you know, as he said, alludes to, the puzzle of putting this team together. And I thought there was a really interesting answer. Rick Tocchet was on with Halford and Brough earlier today. Always a great interview with Rick Tocchet, of course. Remember when there was that brief, oh man, is Rick Tocchet really going to clam up and not give us radio gold anymore?
When?
No.
When was that?
After the Pedersen thing.
No, because like five answers later, he delivered a howitzer quote about Ilya Mikheyev.
Anyways, that is like completely in the past.
Sorry, that was always in the past. What are we talking about?
Even after that, though, there were people concerned. Not me, but there were people concerned.
I actually think, you know, when you can, I like to talk about how you can tell when someone's being genuine versus the like, yeah, like you were great in that community center presentation of Oliver Twist, and people's like voice lift and you can tell they don't mean it. When Rick Tocchet's explaining something about hockey, it's like absolutely back of his throat, totally genuine. I think there's a genuine enthusiasm with trying to help people understand the game.
Yep.
I think it's what made him a good panelist too with
100%.
TNT. And I think he's brought it every single scrum. I don't think that's going to change. I think that's who he is.
Yeah, I think it's too deeply ingrained for that to go away. But anyways, on Halford and Brough, and you can go check out the entire interview. But he was asked, because we talked about this a little bit last week, but we've had a lot of texts come in about, hey, Mikheyev's effectiveness, what's going on there?
Are we going to play this clip, by the way?
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. And Brough asked him specifically, do you need to get Mikheyev going? Here's what Tocchet had to say about it.
Yeah, no, we got to get him going. Mick is, I think Mick has done an unreal job for a guy that's come through that major surgery in his knee. I'll be honest, like, it's not all Mick's fault. I think, you know, Cousy plays a different game sometimes, and I think Mick had tried to adjust to it. I think I've told you guys before, I thought they were playing very wide. They weren't together a lot. And I don't blame Mick, and I'm not blaming Cousy. I just think maybe a different line will help Mick use his speed. And, I want Mick around the puck, you know, even when he doesn't have it. I think, you know, going forward here, I think he's going to really have a good second half because, we need his speed. And we need him to be a forechecker. We need him to come up with loose pucks. And I got to actually start to play him a little bit more in the penalty kill. The penalty kill has been really good because I actually started to play him on the penalty kill. So there's a lot of things there. I can help Mick, too. You know, I got to help him out. But, I think he's going to have a good release the next 30 games. I really do.
So I thought that was a really revealing answer. I mean, first of all, there's a lot of kind of typical Tocchet wisdom in there, right? Starting with him, you know, acknowledging the knee surgery from Mikheyev, of course, ending with, hey, I can always do more to help Mikheyev as well. But I think that answer, you know, interesting what it says about Mikheyev, but also goes to even further highlight why they were so keen on getting Lindholm, right? Because, and I don't think Tocchet was trying to scapegoat Kuzmenko and saying, well, it was all Kuzmenko's fault why Mikheyev wasn't having success. But it was so clear that there was just a stylistic clash between Kuzmenko and Tocchet and really the way the rest of the team was playing. And so then you bring in Lindholm, and the hope is not just that, hey, he's going to be a good fifth guy in the power play. Hey, he'll click with Elias Pettersson. But the hope is that he can fit into that style that you've built, that Rick Tocchet has got the rest of the team to play like. And if you have another piece in your top six who fits that mold, who does those things that Rick Tocchet wants, you know, even if it's not directly, you know, Lindholm setting up Mikheyev for goals or anything like that, just having that type of player, that style of player in the lineup, Rick Tocchet clearly thinks that can help a lot of guys, including Ilya Mikheyev here.
Yeah, and I think the most interesting part of it is him commenting on the knee surgery, right? Like, fundamentally, we have never seen Mikheyev play a single regular season game in a Canucks jersey mm-hmm. in which he wasn't somewhat compromised, either because his ACL was actually torn or because he was recovering from it. The 18-month window, like in any other sport. Now, the movement is different for a skater than it is for a runner, but in any other sport, when you're coming off an ACL tear and the surgery to repair it, you know, 12 to 18 months is where you expect a player's performance to be somewhat limited or mm-hmm. down, or their statistical impact to be affected by that recovery. The Europeans say it's 24 months. Like, the European doctors say it's a 2-year recovery. So, you know, and I think some of that's been hidden because Mikheyev's had such chemistry with Pettersson, because his finishing rate has been so impressive, that I think it's hidden the fact that in terms of Mikheyev's burst, it looks different than it did when he was in his last season in Toronto, for example. Mm-hmm. Mikheyev's a breakaway machine when he's fully healthy, and we have never seen that version of Mikheyev in a Canucks jersey. I really do think that the impact of that is something we're underrating and will probably not see what this actually looks like until next season, most likely, or hopefully down the stretch. I mean, that would be a huge, if he could get some burst back, man, that would be huge for this team. But I think it probably waits till next season. And I really do think that context, like, absolutely must be factored in. Mm-hmm. When we talk about and evaluate Mikheyev's performance, his fit on this team, the contract, everything about it. Like, to me, it's just such a big part of the picture here, and I'm just glad that Tocchet's aware of it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think that's a really matter-of-fact, honest answer, and dead on.
But I think my biggest takeaway is, one, you're right that it's good that he acknowledges that and he's aware of that, but I think what we're learning is that even despite those limitations, right, still coming off the knee surgery, they're not concerned about Mikheyev fitting in with this team and playing a role, right? Like, they still see a role, how he can help this team. And you heard him, hey, I'm playing him on the penalty kill, and even in the top six. And I think now, especially when you look at the top six, and if it ends up being as we expect it to be, as Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin have alluded to, if we expect it to be, you know, Miller and Besser on one line and Pettersson and Lindholm on another line, well, that's the classic duos system that so many teams use now, right? And if you have that, like, I understand maybe Mikheyev and Pugh Suter, they don't look on paper as your classic top six wingers on a contender players, but if they're the third guys complementing really strong duos, I think that's fine. And of course, then you still have the flexibility to load up. You still have the flexibility to do all these other things. So to me, just hearing Tocchet talk about the fit with Lindholm and how he thinks it's going to help Mikheyev, we've seen Pugh Suter be able to contribute in a bunch of different circumstances. I think having those guys slotted in as the complementary players to really good duos, that's fine. I don't look. Would you love an upgrade if one fell in your lap? Sure, but to me that doesn't stand out as a problem area now with Lindholm in the fold. Even though I know, again, on paper you don't see like, oh, Pugh Suter, yeah, clear cut top six guy on a contender.
Yeah, yeah. I think the organization, I think Tocchet, you know, as much as he's saying I don't blame Kuz, I think there was...
You know, he thinks it wasn't a good fit. He thinks it was dragging the team and dragging his line.
I don't think he thinks Kuz can play winning hockey.
Yeah.
I think he...
And he thinks Mikheyev can, right? And that's why, despite the production, that's why there's never been the same concern for me about Mikheyev.
For sure.
Because he thinks he can play winning hockey, ultimately.
Yeah, and I just think there was mounting frustration And I think it was mounting frustration from all sides, right? Like, I'm sure the player was frustrated. You don't accept a trade to Calgary if you're not frustrated. What?
That's true.
It's like Nate Schmidt. Remember Nate Schmidt waved to go
to
Winnipeg?
Winnipeg?
And it was like, whoa!
Wow, things must have been really bad here. I do remember that. It's like the first recorded incident of that. It's like, uh-oh. What does that say about this situation?
That ain't good.
An American player waving to go to Winnipeg. It's not even like, oh, he's from Manitoba, so I can see it. It was like, oh, boy. Uh-oh.
That's
this
problematic.
This guy waved to go there?
So, I mean, obviously there was frustration there. And, you know, and there was frustration from Tocchet's end. And then, you know, there's when you have someone who's discontent in an environment where everything's working, you know, that, I mean, we've all been in those situations and work environments, right? That gets a little tricky. And sometimes you need to move on, right? So I do think that frustration was substantive. Yeah.
Well, I think it was an interesting point, too, that Rutherford made. I think it was on the Merrick show yesterday. Because, you know, one of the debates before the Lindholm trade was, hey, everything's going so well. Do you want to risk chemistry? Like, how much do you want to change things around, take people out of their established roles? And as Rutherford said yesterday, well, really, this is just like a one-for-one replacement, right? Nobody else is really switching roles. Now, it probably means you're going away from the lotto line for at least a little bit here. But, you know, Miller, Besser, and Suter, they've played together a bunch recently. McKayev and Pettersson, they've played together an awful lot over the last couple of years. The bottom six is going to be untouched, right? And we heard Patrick Alvin talk about, you know, the chemistry that he thinks the bottom six has developed. So they made it's an interesting combination of they were able to make this really big swing, but it's not as if there's this massive domino effect on the rest of the roster. Like, most of the guys are going to be in exactly the same role they were before this. You've just made a really key upgrade, especially in terms of, you know, the winning hockey that Tocchet is so concerned about, rightfully so. You've just made that one really key upgrade, but everyone else just kind of gets to keep doing what they've been doing right now.
Yeah, which again speaks to something that we've been talking about all year, which is you've got this odd moment. And also, you know, by the way, to the texter's point, was it Dave with the
Dan?
Then thanks for listening, Dan. Which is, we don't have questions about this team's bottom six. We don't have questions about this team's goaltending. You can look at this team's defense and say, hey, look, they've played some of their best hockey with the six guys. Like, when Soucy's in the lineup, especially in the month of January, we saw this team be, you know, a high-end defensive team, right? One of the better defensive teams in the league. So if you're saying, hey, I think the defense is fine, I think the goaltending's fine, I think the bottom six is really good, the top six is where the questions are. And that's, you know, been kind of a simmering plot line all year. It's just that it hasn't at any point become like a cacophonous.
Well, it's never cost them in terms of results.
Because the team's performed so well.
Yeah. But it's also interesting because, one, they did address the top six with this trade. And also,
yep,
I think it's interesting.
Well, potentially. We haven't seen it.
Well, but I mean,
yeah,
that's obviously
player.
What they're... Okay, sorry. They
have
they,
tried.
Yes, yeah. They made the move that is intended to help it. We'll see what the results are, but that was the intention.
And I think they took a shot in the right direction.
Yeah.
Right?
But also, I think it's interesting, and you know, one of the big takeaways listening to Alvin speak about the acquisition yesterday on the Zoom with media was the repeated emphasis on the 200-foot aspect of Lindholm's game, which of course is true. And I think you made the good point yesterday in the show, right? There's kind of a baseline here of defensive responsibility and winning hockey that he adds over Andre Kuzmenko. The upside will be determined by how much his goal scoring bounces back. But it is worth zeroing in on how much the Canucks, I think, valued adding that baseline of defensive presence and what he can do as a two-way player and, you know, in a matchup role and a penalty killer. Because, yeah, team defense, especially when Carson Soucy has been in the lineup, has been a massive strength for this team. And in some ways, even though they went out and spent a lot to get a top six forward who has, you know, a 40-goal campaign under his belt, but in some ways, they were kind of leaning into that strength here, right? They went and got a guy that, hey, we think that he can have a bounce-back offensive end of the campaign here for us and really help us score goals too and help our power play. But the thing we think we know we're getting, right, the thing we're really certain about getting is improved defensive responsibility in our top six. And that just kind of keeps going to building this identity for this team. You know what I mean? So I think even though it was a top six acquisition, it was also leaning in and adding on to something that was already a strength in terms of their team defense.
Right. Yeah. Although, okay, so it's a good point. right? You're making a good point. This does make them a more robust defensive team.
Yeah.
But also, from early in the year, right? The one, like, it was interesting because in October, November, when we were talking about this team, I was really confident that they would regress in terms of their 5-on-5 scoring, but I was buying the power play as high end.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the power play regressed and the 5-on-5 scoring has remained
red hot. That's true.
Partly because, and you know, this isn't just like, here's the thing about, you know, the Canucks are so disciplined about only taking high quality shots and their work as screeners. It's like, a lot of this is being driven by bottom six guys shooting 20% or higher, right? It's not just the... In fact, while Besser's shooting the lights out, Pedersen's only up a few points over his career rate. JT Miller's only up a few points over his career rate.
Sam Lafferty is up an awful lot over his career
rate. Double.
Yeah.
Even McKayev. Now, there is benefits, obviously, to leaning into your strengths. I'm all about that. But I also think it's worth noting that in January when this team leveled up, okay, Kuzmenko played great. Okay, his last 2 weeks, the scoring wasn't there, but his play the last 2 weeks was trending in the right direction. I think the Canucks know that, by the way. He actually had some of the best underlying numbers on the team. And you know, he is an offensive spark plug, right? He does have real offensive skills.
Yep.
Game-breaking offensive skills, as we've said repeatedly.
Well, when what game was the spin-around behind-the-back no-look pass, right?
The Panthers game?
No. This was on the recent homestand. I want to say it was the
Blues,
right?
Right.
He had two assists, and one, like, that was a game-breaking play.
Lindholm, you kind of need to bounce back offensively. Now, I like that bet. I want to be clear. I like that bet. I like that he's not puck dominant. I like that he can help in transition. Like, he's a guy I feel far more comfortable describing as like a driver, two-way driver, than an offensive driver, because he needs someone more creative to play off, in my opinion. And luckily for him, he's coming to a team with a lot of creative guys to play off of. So I like that fit. All of that makes sense to me. And I'm not being critical so much as I'm thinking critically about the move. Like, I think the fit on Lindholm is perfect, just about. But he does need to hit offensively, because you actually do need to replace. You need him to at least comfortably replace some of the dynamic offense that Kuzmenko does bring, especially if regression is going to hit over the balance of the season, which it very likely will, right? You do need for this to be an addition that hits its like upside case, right? Because there's a floor here where where Elias Lindholm improves the club's PK, fits in really well at the, you know, bumping Besser to the net front, but playing the bumper on the power play, and has some meaningful chemistry and helps Pedersen from a two-way perspective, right? And there's real value there. That's the floor case. But for this to really be worth the price paid for a rental, I do think he needs to hit at least a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Of that offensive, you know, like adding a gear to the Pedersen line in terms of being a finisher on that line and being a guy who produces like he's at least a second line player, right? If not the 30 goal guy that he's been in the very recent past. So, you know, it's interesting. I think we haven't talked much about the downside risk of like, does replacing Kuzmenko with Lindholm, should Lindholm's offensive production not bounce back, actually hurt this team offensively? Because while, again, I like the trade and I like the bet, I do think it's worth at least accounting for the fact that there is that possibility, that downside risk exists in the swap.
And I think that's why I found Tockett's answer about McKayev and the fit with Lindholm on that line so fascinating. Because clearly Tockett, as a big puzzle guy, is counting on this piece to fit so much more smoothly than Kuzmenko. And I think the bet from the Canucks' perspective is that, yes, Lindholm doesn't have those incredibly dynamic, high-end, game-breaking offensive skills that Kuzmenko does, but that the right fit will outweigh that. And you will get, at the very least, equal offensive production, if not increased offensive production, from having a better fit with McKayev and Pedersen, and then you'll get the defensive stuff on top of that, right? That's the bet, is that it's just the fit is going to be so much better that it outweighs the individual skill gap.
Yeah, and I like the bet, but it's not without its risk.
Sure.
right? It's not without its risks, especially given, you know, that this team has probably produced more, in fact, right, than they have in terms of the chances they're generating consistently.
I will say, though, also that if you do get the, like, what we all think is inevitable, and for most teams is inevitable, the super cold shooting streak, finishing streak for, you know, a stretch of 10, 12 games or whatever, the more you increase your defensive reliability, the better you are to position to withstand that, right?
The lower the bar you have to hit in terms of your offensive production.
So bringing in another player that you feel really good about in terms of that defensive game and just leaning into creating that identity for yourself, I do think makes sense. And interesting to hear Tockett and Alvin really hammer on that that thought of just the fit, the stylistic fit, the defensive fit for Elias Lindholm here with the Canucks. Elias Lindholm is going to join the show in the next segment. Again, he is, of course, in Toronto, getting ready to participate in the All-Star Game. It's the skills competition tonight. All of a sudden, Lindholm has a whole bunch of teammates participating in the skills competition. Maybe we'll get him to handicap the field and his which of his new teammates he thinks has the best chance of taking home the prize. But Elias Lindholm, newest member of the Vancouver Canucks, will join us here on the phone next on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz here. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, footwear and orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And Elias Lindholm is going to join us here in just a few minutes on the show. Really excited to chat with Lindholm about the trade to the Canucks and what he's expecting now that he's joining a contending team, a team trying to finish first place in the Western Conference going in to the playoffs. Also, of course, Dmitry Filipovich will join us at 1:30 as usual. What are we drafting? We drafting pies? What do you want to do?
Sure. I like pies.
Spicy take. Yeah. Pies are great.
Maybe only if it's a curry pie, then it's a spicy take.
I see.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's just a delicious take.
Before we get Elias Lindholm on here, chef.
Otherwise, it's a take a la mode.
I mean, that is the best way to have pie. Gotta 100%. Go for it. Chef Graham texted in, "Hey, guys, Canucks trade first-round picks like it's no one's business. How about you tier all of the recent transactions with first-rounders going out the door in recent years, i.e. Miller, Hronek, OEL, Lindholm?" He says, "There might be more. There's no way of knowing." It is true.
It is true, but this management group has never traded their own first-round pick until yesterday.
Until Wednesday. And I don't think that text is designed to be critical.
No.
Because when you look at it, there's really – now we'll see how the Lindholm one pans out. But of the other three, there's only one clunker, and it's a big one with the OEL.
Yeah, I mean, the risk they took in making the Miller deal, right? And the fact that it paid off in part because they made the playoffs in a pandemic-shortened season, right? Looked like they were fading when the season was shut down. You know, won a play-in in which the Minnesota Wild were – completely arbitrarily forbidden from having Kirill Kaprizov play. What? It was completely arbitrary.
It's 100% true.
I mean, you actually like look at the circumstances and like a lot broke right for Vancouver to not, you know, like end up with a lot went right.
I mean, it could have moved up. The pick could have moved up like 10 spots or something, right?
No, it could have gone the
I know, but like
completely open lottery, they would have kept that pick if that had happened. And then I mean, it would have been the next year pick, the OEL pick. In fact, if they'd lost, quote unquote, that trade, they might not have had the weaponry to make the OEL deal, and it might have been a quiet win.
The Miller trade was actually, it was risk management. That's actually an incredible like sliding doors moment that I've never thought of.
Yeah,
no,
you know,
it's actually really good.
It's really interesting. I think, look, the Miller trade was a home run given what they ended up. The moment they made the playoffs in the bubble, we knew.
Yeah.
I actually think I wrote a piece that night that was like, Canucks, make the playoffs, win the Miller trade.
Yeah.
But it was a big risk, man. It was a big risk.
It was, but again,
huge
so there's
it worked out great.
It was
though.
A huge risk, but again, that's the thing. And it's worked out, not just worked out well, but we really think the production they got from Miller on those, even leave the extension out of it, but like on the 4 years they had when they got him, it was an absolute, absolute home run.
Yep.
Hronek one is trending in that direction. Now, again, we'll see where the extension talks go, what the future holds with all those things. But again, I mean, our stance on it at the time was well known. Again, huge, huge risk. But the risk is paying off
in a
big way.
Yep.
This Lindholm one, the one that,
this
stands
is different,
out
man.
Because it's so much more of a traditional trading your first round pick.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and that's why there was so much debate and discussion about the Hronek and Miller ones. It was so atypical, right? This is just like, yeah, hey, you're a really good team. You trade a first round pick. Of course you do.
Yeah.
There's not a lot to debate. It's like, that's what you do.
Yes, especially because it's a 2024. Like, it's nice and clean. You kind of have a good sense that it's going to be at the back end of the first, and you move on from there.
You don't have to stress about it. And then, OEL, clear. Clear bottom tier trade there for a first round pick.
I don't think
we have to spend a lot of time debating that one as we wait for Elias Lindholm.
Love to see him bouncing back though. He's played well.
Oh yeah, sure. And it feels bad like pinning it all on Oliver Ekman-Larsson because it wasn't his fault.
No,
he didn't engineer the trade.
Nope,
he didn't. You know what I mean?
He didn't offer himself the contract.
No, he did not. And as you said, good to see him bouncing back after a tough couple of seasons here in Vancouver. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Somebody's suggesting that we can draft must-watch Canuck games down the stretch of the regular season. That's from Jeff.
There's too many.
Island. I know. There's so many good ones.
And
all
also,
the games against the Kings.
And also, it's like game one of the playoffs, game two of the playoffs, game three of the
playoffs. Well, he means of the regular season.
I know. But, you know. You know what? Anyway, we'll get into that on the other side of our chat with Elias Lindholm.
Now joining us, we go to the Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Hotline. He is the newest member of the Vancouver Canucks. He is Elias Lindholm. Elias, thank you very much for making some time to chat with us today. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you guys?
We're doing really well, and I know, you know, busy stretch for you, obviously, with the trade, and now you're in Toronto, for All-Star festivities. You had the draft last night. Have you had a chance to catch your breath yet after the last 48 hours or so?
I'm not going to lie, it's been pretty intense. Packed some bags after I landed there and found out I was traded and was on my way here a couple hours later. And then since I got here, it's been pretty busy. So, I mean, trying to figure everything out and kind of enjoy this weekend at the same time.
So did Quinn Hughes not get the memo that you'd been traded to the Canucks or what? How did you not end up on Team Hughes? What happened there?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't had a time to chat with him after. I'm gonna ask him about that. But you know what? I'm more than excited to join the real team and be a part of the Canucks and play with him later on. It's fine for this weekend, but later on it will be fun to start playing with all of them.
So Elias, you're traded mid-flight from Cabo San Lucas to Calgary. And you're thinking that you're just going to go to Toronto for, you know, an All-Star weekend, and all of a sudden it's like, I'm going to Toronto for a 7-city, 2-week trip. What do you pack? How many suitcases do you bring, given the time allotted to you to get sorted?
Yeah, it was, like you said, found out mid-flight there that I was traded, and then obviously we landed in Calgary kind of late. I think we left the airport closer to 9:30 p.m. there, and I had a flight going 8 a.m. the next morning. So it's got home, tried to talk to a bunch of people there in Vancouver, and obviously try to text and answer as many texts as possible. So I was a little bit in the blender for a while there, and obviously I like you mentioned, it was a 10 day road trip right away. So try to pack, not too much, but still have enough to to you know, not like look or wear the same things every day.
Yeah, end the road trip with like the world's most wrinkly suit. Elias, with one of your close friends, Jacob Markstrom, played in this market. What's the best piece of advice he gave you about moving to the city or handling the market, as it were?
You know, honestly, he just sent me a text, and that's been it. I think he knows I've been super busy. So I haven't even had a time to catch up yet. But I'm gonna try to, you know, as soon as this road trip or this weekend is over, I'm gonna have hopefully some more free time and some more time to, you know, talk to him and answer that. But you know, obviously we're good friends from back home, and he always talked highly about Vancouver and how beautiful it is, how passionate the fan base and how great the fans are, and the organization is super and so on. So it was he always talked so well about it. So I'm super excited to, you know, obviously play for the Canucks and you know, be on the right side when, you know, obviously in the Rogers.
With the logistical challenges of packing, right? Obviously, it makes it more difficult to be traded and have this big road trip. But on the other hand, when you're joining a new team and you get to join them for an extended 5-game road trip right off the bat, does that help in terms of building familiarity, building chemistry, lobbying to make sure that you're not passed over in the next All-Star draft that you attend with all your teammates?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. You always talk about that early on, wherever you play, like early on in season with your teams. It's always great to have a good road trip right away to get to know all the guys, and especially now to, you know, obviously coming to a new team mid-season here and you know, start off with a, you know, kind of long road trip. And you know, I think it's all positive for me to get to know, and obviously, you know, have a bunch of the guys here as well and the coach as well. So I don't think it could have been much better timing for all that. Just the thing with packing, it's been a little interesting, but you know, all the other stuff, it's just positive so far.
You've obviously had a chance to play a lot against the Canucks during your time in Calgary. You're very familiar with a lot of the players who've been here over the last few seasons. But obviously this year under new coach Rick Tocchet, you know, having a very successful season. From your perspective as somebody playing against the team, you know, a couple times this year with Calgary, but also in years past, what's changed about the Canucks game this season?
I mean, I think overall, it was just the way to play this year. Obviously, last year didn't go the way I wanted, and obviously this year it was a completely different team to play against. Really hard to play against. You know, everyone worked so hard, and you know, so I'm glad I'm on their side now. And obviously, like every time you had to puck, it was always guys all over you. You didn't have time anywhere. It felt like, and obviously they have a great goaltender and you know, steady and good defenseman and a lot of skill up front, and obviously when their power play is just super dangerous as well. So I mean, I see strengths everywhere, and obviously the way they played so far in the season, it's been fun to watch and been kind of brutal to play against. So I'm happy to be joining.
We'll see how the lineup works out when you guys start playing games next week. But we have heard from Jim Rutherford that, you know, he has a suspicion Rick Tocchet might start you on a line with Elias Pettersson. And from what you know about Pettersson's game, how do you think you two can complement each other and bring the best out of each other on the ice together?
No, I mean, for myself, it's always been, you know, I always try to keep my game pretty simple and you know, do my 200-foot game try to, you know, make my teammates better and so on. And you know, obviously when you play with one of the top players in the league and so on, it's usually pretty easy. I was lucky enough to play with two top players, you know, with a fun year a couple of years ago in Calgary. And you know, it was so easy. And, you know, like I said, it's so many good players on this team. And usually when you get a chance to play with one of those guys, it's you know, makes your game pretty easy, and so you know, it should be fun whoever I'm playing with, and so I'm excited.
You played with Pettersson a bit for your country at the World Championships a few years back. Is there anything you remember about having success in terms of how you complimented him then?
I mean, it was kind of a couple years ago now. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I mean, he was pretty new to the league back then, and obviously he's taken a lot of steps, mm-hmm. Grown to be, like we talked about, really one of the top players in the league, and his skill set is just unbelievable. Some of the goals he scores it's just crazy how he even does it. So I mean. Like we talked about, I think, you know, once you get a chance to play with top players, it's usually pretty easy. And I think it'll be good. Like I said, you know, whoever I'm playing with, you know, with so many top players, it should be pretty easy.
With Elias, you know, the trade deadline for fans is a time for fun and speculation, but for players, it can be pretty stressful. When a team jumps the market and makes a deal early, we talk about a player, you know, having more time to adjust to a new system and all the advantages from a hockey side. But from a personal side, when you're a pending unrestricted free agent who's not actively engaged in extension talks with your current team as you were in Calgary, is there a relief, like a personal relief to ripping the Band-Aid off, to having this done, to knowing where you'll be for the rest of the season?
Yeah, 100%. You know, obviously didn't work out in Calgary with the, you know, staying there. So I knew this was coming for a long time. Obviously, you know, I didn't think it was going to be this early on, but you know, it's, I couldn't be more happy to have it over with and, you know, find out where to play for, you know, reminder of the season here and obviously to get it done and get to know everyone and get into it rather than having just, mm-hmm. you know, now you get at least a couple more weeks and I think that's all just positive. Obviously for myself, the season hasn't gone the way I wanted and, you know, it's been tough to having this on your back of your mind and, you know, for a long time. So, you know, I'm just happy it's over with and I can now just, you know where I'm going to play and hopefully have a good long season with the Canucks.
Elias, I know it's been a very hectic couple of days. I know you got lots going on with the All-Star festivities in Toronto, so we really appreciate you making some time to chat with us today. Thanks for doing this and best of luck. We can't wait to see you on the ice for the Canucks.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
That is Elias Lindholm, the newest member of the Vancouver Canucks, sharing his thoughts on the trade, how it all went down, the outlook for the rest of the season, and also what he can bring and how he can fit with the team. And, you know, a lot of interesting things in there, right? Starting with, hey, we always hear about the stress that trade season brings for players, right? But for Lindholm, who, as he said, kind of saw the writing on the wall, a bit of a relief to get it done this early. And especially, you know, hey, you're going to All-Star, so, okay, you have to change your travel plans and your wardrobe a little bit, but at least there's a whole bunch of your new teammates and your coach there that you can maybe get some FaceTime and hit the ground running. So pretty ideal circumstances, really, for Lindholm to be joining the team.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things like a roller coaster. When you're going up, that's scarier than going down, right? It's the anticipation that's actually terrifying.
Yeah, and then you do it, and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like spending those months where, you know, contract talks kind of stall and you know that you're going to move on, but you don't know where and you don't know when. And, that stress is really impactful in my experience working with players. So I'm sure, you know, having just like the basic level of certainty means a lot for a player in Lindholm's shoes.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, he'll get a chance to go on the road as well with the team, which is always a big thing because you're together so much more and it gives you some of that bonding time and that chance to be familiar. And then, you know, something that a lot of people pointed out about the trade when it happened, and I think Lindholm kind of echoing some of those thoughts, you look at the production and the trend line over the last couple of years, and yeah, it can be concerning. Now, there's a shooting percentage element for him this year as well, but, you know, you heard him talk about it. Yeah, playing with great players. I can fit in and play with great players. Look how fun it was when I was playing with Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk, and now it looks like he'll get a chance to do that again with Elias Pettersson, and that's such a huge part of this, right? His ability to be that complementary player who fits in so seamlessly, who doesn't need the puck, but can kind of amplify some of the things that Elias Pettersson does really well. And Pettersson can bring out the best of Lindholm, but Lindholm can do things to really support Elias Pettersson. And, you know, we talked about the offensive upside needing to hit for this trade to really be a grand slam win for the Canucks. And I think it starts with that ability of Lindholm to be that complementary piece next to a true star player like Elias Pettersson.
Yeah. The thing about it too, I mean, we talked about it this a bit in the context of Mikheyev, but it's not the top six need that the Canucks filled with this trade. It's not about Mikheyev. It's about JT Miller or Elias Pettersson. It's about creating an environment. I mean, we saw it that week in New York, right? When you give Pettersson high-end line mates and play him more often with Quinn Hughes, the pyrotechnics that can occur are, like, incomparable, right? I mean, it's you can start to imagine getting, you know, not, maybe if not McKinnon, Makar, Rantanen stuff, or McDavid, Dreisaitl, Bouchard stuff, like
pretty close.
And next layer down, and the way that the Canucks have sort of lined up, I mean, whether it's been, you know, the rotating cast of straight line mates for Miller and for the Miller-Besser duo, right? And then you see it with Pettersson, and it's like, oh, hey, I like that, right? And likewise, you know, Pettersson with Kuzmenko kind of falling off and Mikheyev starting strong, but, you know, is in a long goalless drought. Like, what they needed was help for Miller and Pettersson. Like, that was fundamentally why top six forward was always what this team was targeting and always what they wanted to spend on, right? Lindholm is going to help from a play-driving perspective, without question. You know, the question is, how quickly do they find that offensive chemistry? Can he pop off the way he has in the past when given a chance to play with creative playmakers? I like the bet a lot. I'll tell you that much.
This text comes in on the other side. You guys have really gassed up Lindholm when he's having a terrible season, LOL. Yeah, he's having a down season. There's
have
no debate.
Have we gassed him up?
I mean, we've been high on it.
We've been debating him for weeks.
We have been debating him for weeks.
Leading up to this.
But I think
and not in purely glowing terms.
No.
I mean, people were mad.
My journey was kind of like, at first I was entirely on board. I was like, go, go, go.
Yeah.
Started to dig into it a little more. I was like, oh, there are some concerning things. But then I started to think about all the boxes he checks.
Yeah,
I was okay, I'm back in.
The fit side is what matters.
That's ultimately where it comes down, right?
I mean, the fit side gave it such a high floor that the risk is relatively low. But, you know, I mean, we literally spent an entire segment talking about, like, the subtle risk to 5-on-5 offense that this deal represents.
But not all down seasons are created equally, right? I think that's, you always have to dig into the contextual factors. And I think there's a reason why it's not as if the Canucks were on an island going after this player, right? Like, there were a whole bunch of other teams who were really, really interested in acquiring the services of Elias Lindholm. And when he hits the open market in free agency, there's going to be a lot of teams very, very interested in bidding and giving him a significant deal to play for their team, right? And I think the league in general, and obviously the Canucks, not that they completely discount what he's doing this year, not that they think, oh, the real version is, you know, him from 2 years ago when he was a 40-goal scorer, but it wasn't just that season. It's not like he was a one-hit wonder, and that was his only really, really strong season. That was his career year, but he's been a very, very effective and productive player consistently during his time in Calgary, right? So, yeah, do you factor in maybe a little, you know, the age curve starting to catch up and all of that? Sure. But we're not creating this idea of a really good player in Elias Lindholm out of nowhere. Like, he's been a really good player for a while in the league now. And
he's been a top-line center.
You can, again, you look at the context.
5-6 years.
You know, as much as people might want to say there's stylistic differences between him and Bo Horvat, like, from a value perspective, it was pretty similar for a long time between Lindholm and Bo Horvat. Like, that's just the type of player he is. That's the resume that he's amassed. And so you look at, you dig a little deeper and you think, okay, he's coming to a better situation. He's going to play for a contender. All of that. You look at what Rick Tocchet has been able to do generally, getting the most out of his players. And I don't think it's unreasonable to start thinking about a bounce back. I don't think it's gassing up the player. I think it's just taking all of the facts into consideration when it comes to him.
100%. And looking at where he's thrived offensively in the past. right? Which is
yes, with specifically with elite playmakers,
yeah,
right? Who can get the puck in soft areas and he can get open there and use his shot.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
So no, Lindholm's really good. Lindholm's a really good ad, and it's going to be fascinating to watch it play out. He's going to make his debut for the Canucks against the team that drafted him fifth overall 11 years ago. That's kind of a neat wrinkle. And then he's going to be tested against the Boston Bruins. Like, right off the bat, you know, this team's going to play some
into
games
the fire
with some weight. And by the way, one quick point before we have Dim on. I was thinking about this on my walk in because the Canucks face one of the hardest schedules in the league over the balance of the season, right? It's going to be a fascinating test. And yet, you know, I was thinking about it. I was like, this team's going to make the playoffs. Edmonton's going to need to close so hard for this to be like a real divisional race. You know, there is meaning in winning the West. But for the most part, the stakes over the balance of the campaign, like the big picture, if we try to focus like a laser on the big picture here, what really is going to matter between now and the end of the season? And it's like, it's really about trying to identify signal in the club's performance and tracking injuries. Like, those are the two big stories here now.
Yeah, well, the injuries for sure.
Yeah. And then sort of, for me, it's almost like battle for the West, battle for the Pacific Division are kind of almost subheaders.
Winning the West is a pretty big deal.
It is.
It's a huge deal.
It is.
I'm not prepared to relegate it to subheading status. By the way, just on Lindholm and his production, if he'd been in this market the whole season, shooting percentage would be a huge conversation with Elias Lindholm. Shooting 6.9% this year, not nice. But his last six seasons, 450 games prior to this season, he was a 14.7% shooter. So cut in half this year. And even if you think, oh, a little bit of age-related decline, it's probably not going to drop off in half in one season, right? So people always like, oh, you guys talk about shooting percentage only in the negative sense. But like, this is clearly a case where you're betting on him to finish at a higher rate for the remainder of season than he has so far this season.
Yeah, you're definitely hoping that with a 6.9% shooting clip, he can flip around.
Turn that right around. All right.
Oh, man, we got to stop with those jokes.
On that note, we will go to break. Dmitry Filipovich from the Hockey PDO cast joins us next to wrap up the week here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Do you want me to think that you're wild?
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here live from the Kintech studio. The iconic Coors Light Chill Train is heading to Las Vegas for the big game, and it just made a stop in Vancouver, leaving behind a trail of epic prizes. On February 1st and 2nd, hey, that's today, from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., look for its frozen tracks at Robson Square for a chance to win instant prizes that deliver big game day chill. Or the ultimate grand prize, a trip to next year's big game event. Learn more at CoorsLight.ca/thechilltrain. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now joining us in studio to wrap up the week. He is the host of the Hockey PDO cast and a dear friend of the show. I'm going to bump you up. Not just a friend of the show. Dear friend of the show, Dmitry Filipovich.
Best friend of the show.
Yeah, I say realistically, yes.
Bestie. He's our show bestie.
You guys don't say this to everyone, right?
No.
No.
Never. We've never said it before.
We've never said best friend. We've said friend of the show, I'm sure.
100%.
No.
Liberally, in fact.
I am honored.
I think it's between him or Gentili. But Gentili doesn't live here, so it's harder.
Well, yeah. Gentili doesn't qualify until we get his Arthur Smith take. That's the rule.
Oh, God.
What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good. It's always fun to close out the week with you guys. And luckily, you know, there's been nothing really going on to talk about this week.
No kidding,
so I don't know. Are we going to draft something? What are we going to do?
You're still buzzing from the All-Star draft, really, right?
Like, oh, that was an electrifying event, truly. So much personality
the
on this
play. The players were excited, really. The crowd was excited. Everyone was so into it.
David Amber asking Austin Matthews who has the best hair in the NHL was hilarious.
Why? Because Matthews is trending.
He's clinging on for dear life.
By the way,
his generation's Ryan Getzlaf.
Shout out to David Amber. That's like one of the hardest broadcasting jobs you can be given.
By far.
And he is really, really good at his job. He's I was like, oh my gosh, I would never want to do this. It would stress me out so much.
Also, no one's held more Canucks stock than David Amber over the past few years. That's so for him to get to do the event with six Canucks, it's like just the David Amber Vindication Bowl. I love it.
Yeah, fantastic. All right. As you mentioned, there's lots happening, lots of news around the league, but we haven't had a chance to talk to you yet about the Elias Lindholm acquisition for the Vancouver Canucks, which is kind of, before we get into some of the nitty gritty and like fit and how he's going to, you know, who he'll play with and all that, what are your kind of just big picture thoughts on the deal for the Canucks?
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit, especially when you see the price that the Winnipeg Jets paid today for Sean Monahan. I think Lindholm's quite clearly a superior player, despite the fact that he scored a few less points than him, I guess, so far this season. So yeah, I love it. I thought it was a no-brainer from them for price paid, also what he's going to mean to this team and the spot they're in as an organization right now, with their place in the standing and what this season means for them.
Do you factor in that the Canucks seem to have set a market that then the Winnipeg Jets had to pay into your evaluation of the deal? Because I kind of do. Like the Demko contract. The Demko contract, when they signed it, there was virtually no precedent for a goaltender with his track record getting that $5 million deal. Mm-hmm. And then the Kings do Cal Peterson. Right. And then the Florida Panthers do Spencer Knight. And you've got this like long list of bodies in the rearview mirror while it's worked out to the 99th percentile
for the Canucks. Yeah.
And it's like the value of the deal is amplified by the fact that it's created a market that a lot of other teams made a mistake in.
I mean, I do, just in the sense that they clearly got ahead of the market, or I guess set the precedent. And we knew that Lindholm was a player that both the Jets and the Avalanche and then the Bruins, apparently even the Golden Knights were in on, right? And so these are teams that the Canucks will be competing with, theoretically. And so just getting ahead of them, getting that player, and getting them when they did, where now you're looking at there's 16 games they're going to play between when they resume after the All-Star break and the March 8th deadline. So if they had waited till then, not only would he not be available potentially, but they just get less utility out of him. So the timing and everything makes a lot of sense, and it's a win-win.
Yeah, and you never know where the market will go also, right? Like at this point, it's not as if they didn't quote-unquote fleece the Flames or whatever, but you got your cost certainty. You're not at risk of some crazy bidding war developing or the market getting set by other players should that materialize.
Are you surprised, given the teams that were in, motivated buyers, teams that would have considered him a long-term piece like the Bruins, that the Canucks ended up outbidding everybody? Like, knowing what we know about the price, are you surprised that Lindholm didn't go for more?
I am. I thought it was a very reasonable price. Like, I like it from the Flames' perspective because they at least got future assets that you can talk yourself into, right? A first-round pick, a defenseman with upside,
upside shot, too.
Like, I like that more than them just getting back a bunch of NHLers that can help them right now but don't actually move the needle long-term. At the same time, though, from the Canucks' perspective, there's a very high likelihood that pick is going to be in the late 20s, which is essentially the same value as like a second round pick, which no one would bat an eye at. And yeah, I mean, this is a very valuable player who's going to help them quite a bit. They got rid of that $5.5 million from Kuzmenko next year, which I think has been a very underrated part of this. Like, I haven't seen very many people talking about that as a legitimate asset for them, at least like nationally, right? Like, people who aren't following the team closely are like, oh, the Flames got Kuzmenko. We'll see if he's going to play in the top line. They can rehabilitate his value. And it's like, no, the Canucks, we're doing laps clearing that money for next year. Like, that means so much to them.
It's so funny to me because this happened with the Canucks in the Horvat trade yesterday where they get Beauvillier and he's committed to the next year. Like, teams are so wary of taking on salary cap commitments until it comes time to do the pick, prospect, and player trade. And then they're like, well, it's in the rules. We have to take a roster player right now. I guess we'll take the salary cap space. But you're right. Huge that they got that money off the books for next year. I think, you know, to your point, Drancer, about the Bruins, for example, they spent so many assets last year. I just don't know if they are in a position to do something like that again this year. And then I think there's just this natural conservatism from teams, right, where they look at it and say, well, hey, if we strike out on Lindholm, we'll just go after Monahan and we'll pay even less. It's like, well, yeah, because you're getting a way lesser player. And I think that's one of Rutherford's strengths, is he's less concerned about haggling over, you know, no, we're not going to give you this extra third round pick. He's just like, no, I want the player who fits for my team, right?
No, certainly. I think Colorado is a team that probably could have matched it, right? Because they have access to their first. They have some really interesting defense prospects as well that they could have thrown in. And they're a team that's been reported to be in on Lindholm previously, right? And they need a second line center. So we'll see what they do. But yeah, like I didn't really view, and the Bruins were reported, I think, on 32 Thoughts as a team that wanted to talk extension before they made the trade. Yeah. And they were like the only team that felt that way. So yeah, it was a bit of an interesting market.
They'll be calling on July 1st, I'm sure. Are you buying, Drance and I were talking this in the last segment, the his goal scoring is going to bounce back now playing with high-end players again. We're presumed starting with Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, I do. I think there's been a bit of an unfair framing of him as a goal scorer, right? Because mm-hmm. everyone is quick to point out that the 42 goals he scored 2 years ago playing with Tkachuk yep. and Gaudreau when they were at their sort of apex as playmakers mm-hmm. was an aberration, and he's never been that player before. But then this year he's on pace for 15 goals, and that is about as extreme of an outlier yep. in the other way, right? Where throughout his Flames tenure, even if you remove that career year, the other four full seasons he played for them, he averaged about 28 goals per 82 games, shot about 14 or 15%. And this year, that shooting percentage got cut in half, yeah. the goal scoring got cut in half. And so, yeah, I mean, I know he's 29 and he's kind of approaching maybe a different stage of his career as a player, but I still expect him to bounce back, especially with more talent around him. So, yeah, I think that's a really smart kind of calculated bet by the Canucks.
Yeah, as I was saying, yeah, the previous six seasons before this one, 14.7 shooting percentage, yeah. down just below seven this year. So, as you said, it directly cut in half. That's kind of a big deal when it comes to goal scoring. How much does he still bring to the table as a two-way player?
That's an interesting question, right? Because this is, I think, the first year he's been outscored at 5-on-5.
Yeah.
And the defensive metrics are down a little bit. Now, they're down across the board for the Flames, because, yeah. and I think we should have expected that post Daryl Sutter. We know kind of the impact he has on his teams defensively and a 5-on-5. Kevin Woodley had this stat for me. I know you guys have him on your show as well, but he was on my show, the PDO cast, last week, and he dropped this stat where Clearsight Analytics has Jacob Markstrom's expected save percentage this season at .874.
Unreal. Yeah.
Which is just stunning to think about, and that kind of paints the picture of how bad the Flames have been defensively. And so it's tough to evaluate Lindholm as just an individual player in that grand scheme of things. I think he's still certainly got all the tools that he was heralded for previously, so I'd expect that to carry over on the Canucks. And I don't know, do you want to talk a little bit about him and Pettersson as a fit? Because
yeah,
I think they
absolutely.
Can complement each other really
yeah,
well.
I mean, well, because it's interesting because, you know, one of the kind of buzzwords coming out of this trade was he's not a puck-dominant player, and in some sense, you can almost read that as a negative, right? Because it's like, oh, he's not going to do a lot of that heavy lifting with the puck. But then if you're on a line with Elias Pettersson, well, that can be a huge positive, right? Hey, you don't need the puck to be effective. You can leave that to Pettersson and still do other things.
Yeah, not only, I think, can they make their jobs easier for each other, but they can also get the best out of each other, right? And in a sense where all of a sudden Pettersson doesn't have to do all that heavy lifting in terms of the dirty work off the puck,
yep.
deep in his own zone. Lindholm can do some of that. And then once they get into the offensive zone, you've got Pettersson passing the puck to him in the slot, and I think that's going to help Lindholm's goal scoring as well. So it's a really nice fit that way, and I think they can be really mutually beneficial for
And also, I mean, we've seen Tockett has typically used the Miller line first choice in a matchup situation, but now we're looking at a potential Lindholm, Pettersson, Mikheyev trio, and it's like, you know, Lindholm was a Selke runner-up. You know, Pettersson has obviously gotten a lot of positive reviews for his defensive game. Mikheyev is a really stable winger. Like, that has the makings of a pretty solid matchup line right there.
No, it really does. I'm really
I'm
really enjoying Canucks talk here with Jamie Dodd and Dmitry Filipovich.
Is nuking some same-game parlay over there.
No.
Don't look at my phone.
What did I say that made you look up?
Well, I just the Trump language.
What?
Really stable winger. I immediately was like, what's going on here?
More and more people
are start paying attention.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Is he a really stable right winger?
Welcome back, Dreads.
That's all you wanted to say.
I was interested in what Dmitry was saying.
Potential of that trio as a matchup unit.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what they do. And I think the benefit of making this trade this far out in advance of the deadline is it gives them time to experiment with that, right? I think they're going to find some things work better than others. And rather than having a sprint of like 15, 20 games before the playoffs to try and cram all of this in, they actually have time to prepare, test it out, give it real runway to explore it all. So yeah, I'm really curious. I think they're going to experiment with all of it. And
if you had to add like a lesser piece to the Canucks now, between now and the deadline, what are you targeting?
Well, they have the option to do so, right? I think they have about $2 million
They cleared cap space, not just for next year, this year. Lindholm makes less than Kuzmenko, right? So it did buy them a little bit of flexibility.
Yeah, about $2 million or so up until the deadline. And so I think adding another winger who can conceivably bump up to that second line, depending on your formation, and can kind of fit the MO of this team, just sort of what they do in the bottom six, which is just being like really heavy on the forecheck and grinding out possessions that way and kind of working the puck down low. I think getting another player like that, and those are players you can find for cheap.
For sure.
Especially on the wing, that would be imperative, and I think that's exactly what they're going to pursue.
Yeah, we've heard the Jordan Greenway in terms of that big, strong physical presence, certainly. I think they will look to add that. You mentioned Winnipeg going out and adding Sean Monahan. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that fit and price as well from their perspective? By the way, shout out to the Habs. We always talk about this, like, get paid to acquire them and then pay and then flip them for another asset. It so rarely actually happens like that. It's like the masterclass. People will be talking about this forever from Kent Hughes and the Habs.
Yeah, it worked out perfectly. Got the first for him and then to take him on and then got the first for him from Winnipeg. Yeah, I thought it was a bit pricey, especially for a player with his injury history, right? Mm. Like last year, he was a trendy trade deadline guy and then he got hurt in December and was out for the year and they weren't able to trade him. And so they signed him for a 1-year deal, rehabilitated that. Kudos to him for staying healthy and being productive. Hasn't missed a single game this year, but I think there's a lot of risk there. And also the foot speed is a bit of a concern for me. I know that the Jets have some wingers, like a Nikolaj Ehlers, for example, that can kind of insulate him and do a lot of the puck transportation for him. He'll help their power play, certainly. Like, I think they got better from it. I just think when you're talking about giving up a first-round pick like that, I would have expected them to get a player with, I guess, a bit of a higher floor in terms of being like a very reliable player, whereas I think he's a bit of a wild card in that case.
So Dom Lucision's model now has the Jets and the Canucks projected to finish. Well, the Canucks projected to finish with 112 points, the Jets with 111 at the top of the Western Conference. Who are you taking for the Western Conference between those two teams?
The Canucks have a tougher schedule, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I'll still take the Canucks, I think. But man, it's going to be tough, especially for the Jets, though. Like, I know the Oilers are coming on and, and Vegas is still there for the Canucks in the Pacific. But if you look at that Central with the Jets, the Stars, and the Avs, they're all within like 2 points of each other right now in terms of their pace. And I think that's just going to be an absolute slugfest. So I think, as weird as it is to say, considering how well Edmonton's playing and Vegas being good, like, I think the Canucks' path in terms of the teams they're competing with at the top of their division is a bit less precarious, I guess, than Winnipeg's.
Canucks play the Jets game 82 in Winnipeg.
So and that could be a big one.
And play them three more times.
Yeah.
Like, fundamentally, this, if the race was just between those two, and I don't think it is, I don't think we should count out the Avalanche, the Oilers. I'm always happy to count out the Stars. Mostly to troll Dim. If it was just between those two teams, the cool thing is they'll decide it themselves.
Right.
I love those.
100%.
Yep.
Well, same thing. Well, I mean, they only have one more game left against the Oilers, but that even that one could have implications, right? I think it's right before the end of the season. Well, if Edmonton just keeps winning every game for the rest of the season, we'll see where they end up in the standings.
That's an if we'd usually laugh about.
Not with this team.
Not right now. Are we going to draft pies, by the way?
I don't know. What do you think? Do you have another idea?
But I want to get
Is that something that we had previously? You framed that as like something we had kind of discussed in the past, and then you were just bringing it back up.
Did I?
When in reality, it's the first year ever since.
I think we
Drance and I have talked about it. You were not involved.
There's been a lot of pie talk on our.
The way you framed it was like, should we finally do the thing that we've been hinting at for? I was like, this is the first time hearing this. I
mean, we'll get it out of the way.
I'm down, but I mean,
all right. I think we should draft pies.
All right, let's do it.
Right now?
Yeah, I'm ready to
draft. I don't know if that's going to sustain 9 minutes of content.
Oh, bud.
I've seen Tom do 12 minutes on outerwear. I think you could easily do that.
The thing about pies, too, is it's like we don't have to go three rounds. Like, we can go like six.
That's true. It's like the Major League Baseball. I don't know if they still do this, but in the Major League Baseball draft, they used to just keep drafting until teams said, no, we're good.
Yeah.
So you could just be the last team just taking guys over and over again. So we can do that.
Yeah.
Just keep drafting until we're out of ideas here.
Let's do it.
And yes, I did just Google types of pie.
Yeah, that's fine.
So just whatever. Now, savory, like
savory texted, pies
somebody,
is there.
Somebody texted in, is pizza a pie?
No.
Pizza's
not a pie.
No. Okay.
But, and by the way, no getting around. Well, I'm okay to draft, though, a pizza pot pie, which is a specific Chicago variation on pizza and qualifies
as a pie.
You
do that.
I'm not going to. I don't like, I like pizza to be not that deep.
All right.
Pizza, it's not that deep.
It's not that deep, man.
It's just
delicious. You're overthinking it.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first? You go first.
Yeah, go first.
Me?
Yeah.
I go first. Whew. That is a lot of pressure.
You're on the clock.
While I wait for this list of pies to pop up on my phone.
Strawberry rhubarb pie. First overall.
Good one. That's a strong pick. Strong pick.
Generational pie.
Generational.
Nice. That was number one on this list that just pop up.
Yep.
Yeah, there you go. Should I go second?
Yeah.
Yep.
Are you going to stick to your board? Or you
no, no. This this list, it looks like Tom made this list. I don't
What do you mean?
Well, I don't agree with it.
Looks stupid.
No, I think they're ranking things way too high that they could get later on in the list.
Fair enough.
You know what? Call me boring. I'm just going to take an apple pie. I love a good apple pie.
That was going to be my pick.
Especially put a little vanilla ice cream with it. Ooh. Mm.
All right. So I got two here. I'm going to go number one, banana cream pie.
Ooh.
And number two, for my second pick, I'm going to go blueberry pie. So I got banana cream and blueberry as my two first pies.
Nice
off the board.
Thank you.
Nice.
I thought so.
So it's back to me.
Mm-hmm.
I will go with, are you guys familiar with tortiere?
Oh, yeah.
French-Canadian meat pie. Yeah. Delightful. So my father-in-law's from Quebec, and we always have that at family functions. And yeah. Or other assorted get-togethers.
Sorry,
yeah.
Was that the pick?
Tortiere. Yes.
It's really good.
Really
and,
good.
Yeah.
We used to get them from, what's that place in Montreal? We used to
I don't know.
At Christmas when I lived in Toronto, I'd like make sure to get them. They were unreal.
I mean, there's lots of places in Montreal. We used to do this with my family on like a Christmas Eve meal, a tortiere.
Nice.
From some fancy place.
Oh, it's definitely I definitely associate it with Christmas. Maison Publique. That's I'm pretty sure what I'm thinking.
Great.
Yep. Anyway, I'm going to take I'm in a snake spot. I get two picks.
Yeah, two big picks here.
Pressure. I'm going to take pot pie.
Oh,
as a category.
No, No. You got to choose the filling.
Yeah, I think you have to.
All right. Well, I want a chicken pot pie with like at least some curry flavor profile to it.
Oh, okay.
That's specifically the type of thing I'm talking about. And then this isn't like big in Canada, but it is amazing. Sweet potato pie? You ever had sweet potato pie?
I've never had sweet potato pie.
No, can you tell us about it? What's the profile like?
God tier pie. Sweet potato pie is incredible, man. It's a southern, like it's almost got the texture of pumpkin pie, but it's just delicious.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
It's, it's a better version of pumpkin pie.
Yeah. Okay. I see where you're going. I see.
So, what was your second pick?
Blueberry.
A blueberry pie.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh man. Oh, we're getting thin here.
Yeah.
On my list. You know what? I'll take a pumpkin pie.
All right. Somebody had to do it eventually.
Yeah.
It is yummy.
It was gonna go. I mean, it's.
I'm not even the biggest fan. I just cornered that market.
You know what pumpkin pie is? It's the like really unsexy veteran receiver in your fantasy draft that nobody wants to
Adam
take.
Adam Thielen.
Like, Keenan Allen. Yeah, Adam Thielen.
Keenan Allen. It's better than
Adam
Thielen. No, it's not
Adam Thielen. Keenan Allen was like number one this
Keenan
year.
Keenan Allen was a stud this year, man.
Yeah, before he got hurt, he was literally like number one.
Pumpkin pie is a stud pie.
I wouldn't say that.
It seems like we're going to make a trade, like, trade after the show.
Excuse me. You just drafted at 8th overall.
It's definitely.
There's no way Keenan Allen was more than wide receiver 8.
No, but it's definitely. It's different. You can't compare wide. Anyways.
I just did.
It's definitely more Adam Thielen. Than Keenan Allen.
Pumpkin pie is on the block. You can acquire it.
Sorry, but is pumpkin pie on like a rapid decline attached to a rookie quarterback that can't line up under center? Anyway.
All right. So what did you take? You took pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin pie, of course.
We were just talking about it. Don't know
he
why.
He took Adam Thielen.
Yeah, Adam Thielen. All right. I'll go with lemon meringue.
Oh, nice. I was looking at
that. That is a very, very strong pick.
That's right. I'll go with lemon meringue. Are we going to do one more round here?
I don't know. I'm out of pies.
No. We're doing another round.
All right. I'll do lemon meringue. Right. And I'm going to go with cherry pie.
It's good.
Cherry I feel like it's a little too similar to blueberry, but hey, whatever. Load up on the good stuff. Why not?
Super good.
Yeah.
What are we working with here? I mean, this list is really letting me down right now. What are some of the best pies left on the board?
There's lots of good pies left on the board, but I don't want to tell you all of them because there's one that I really want still. There's also different variations of pot pie.
You know what? I'm going to get a key lime.
No, that was what I wanted.
Ooh, I love a good key lime.
That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good take.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to fall back then and do a pecan pie.
Oh, nice.
And that'll be the last pick in the draft.
There you go. Now, people were really fired up about pumpkin pie sliding. Somebody said, pumpkin pie is the pie that was rated to go second or third round, is now sitting in the green room holding a brave face for the camera as they fall.
Will Levis?
They fall down the board. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers back in the day, right? The
what's a good NHLer who's really fallen recently?
At the draft? Brandon Saad.
Oh, yeah. I was going to go Angelo Esposito.
Yeah, but he didn't amount to much.
No, I know. Well,
people are also...
Ratu.
Nice one.
People also very upset we didn't take shepherd's pie.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Shepherd's pie's all right.
I already had my meat pie, though. I figured
it out. I didn't get a savory pie.
Yeah.
I took... It was between cherry and shepherd's pie at the end there, but I'm all in on sweet.
Have you ever had macaroni pie?
I don't think so.
No.
It's very Scottish, and it's exactly what it sounds like. It's mac and cheese in a pie. It's fantastic.
That does... That does sound very good.
God tier with if you've been overserved the evening prior in like Glasgow or Edinburgh.
Somebody texted Jamie for the win. I do think this was strong. So yeah, I got banana cream, lemon meringue, blueberry, cherry. That's a killer dessert.
Not a lot of versatility though.
No. But look, stick with what you do and do it well.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I've got some people texting me talking about flapper pie, by the way, which is like a prairie pie, not unlike lemon meringue. That they are outraged that we didn't pick flapper pie, so I at least wanted to shout it out.
I am learning about like new versions of pies that I didn't hear. Like someone taking bacon and egg pie. Mm. I've never heard of that.
It seems like you could put anything in a pie.
Realistically, you just take a pie crust, put whatever you want in there, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There you go. Yep. Call it a pie and it's good to go. All right. You know, we did it. We filled 9 minutes of pie content.
Easily, too. Easily.
We could have done a couple more rounds. I mean,
that was no strain.
You said you were out.
Whoa, now that I know about flapper pie, I mean, I'm back in.
I'm tapping back in. I got more pies.
Give me the hot tag.
You start drafting like 3.14 and Pikachu.
Yeah, somebody texted it. Drance is definitely going to draft 3.14.
I thought about it. That texter knows me. I'm not going to pretend they don't.
It's, your brand is strong. Let's put it that way. All right. Enjoy the weekend, guys. Enjoy the All-Star game. We will look ahead to Lindholm's debut on Monday. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. You got it on Sportsnet 650.